the senior physicians of the day decided that they would, of course, take over and manage the situation. And so the first doctor on the scene took his unclean hand and shoved his finger up the bullet hole to see if he could feel where the bullet was.
Dr. Matthew Simmons tells an audience at the Journey Museum about the medical care given to President James Garfield after he was shot on July 2, 1881. Today, the president's wound would have been fairly easily treated, but not back then. He died on September 19th of infection.
Dozens of doctors examined the president and were poking with dirty hands, probes. Some of them would arrive on horseback and had essentially manure on their hands.
Simmons' presentation is part of the History of Medicine, researched by the Journey Museum's Christy Thielen, who shows me around the exhibit.
Yeah. Was there a point where everything was pretty much medicine or butchery? And then it just kind of
I think it eventually evolved. But of course, the person who is the giant figure with regard to the cleanliness necessary for proper hospital or surgical conditions was Lister.
Thielen says Joseph Lister's recommendations for sterilization and good hygiene met with initial opposition from professionals set in their ways.
There were doctors, surgeons, who prided themselves on wearing the same hospital gown surgery after surgery after surgery and actually talked about the gown containing what they called good old surgical stink.
Thielen discovered in her research that patients who weren't killed by the germs might be offed by the drugs.
Frontier medicine was a dangerous thing. The reason being that there was no structure with regard to how medicines were created or how medicines were packaged. The concept of looking at the back of a package to know how much you should take and how much is too much, that just didn't exist.
She says patients weren't aware of the hazards of addiction or overdose until Theodore Roosevelt became president and passed the Pure Food and Drug Act in 1906.
There are several women who went on to become doctors after having experienced the heartache of having lost family members who medicated themselves for an illness, used a medicine that would have been perfectly proper, used way too much of it, and died of an overdose.
Frontier medicine was often administered by women and not necessarily those with medical training.
Women came west armed with whatever information they had that had been passed down through the generations or sometimes gleaned from books that women had regarding herbal medicines and so on. Here within the Black Hills, one of our most notable nurses, quote unquote, is of course the very famous Calamity Jane, who is known for having taken care of people during a smallpox epidemic that occurred near Deadwood.
Calamity Jane is one of the many medical people depicted on storyboards attached to the walls of the Adelstein Gallery. When Thielen started researching late 19th century doctors in the Black Hills, she found that they not only practiced medicine, but also were community leaders, serving on school boards or local government commissions.
Virtually all of the doctors that are mentioned in these storyboards at some point or another served as mayor of Rapid City. Can you imagine any contemporary doctor taking time off from his practice to be a mayor or to blend being a mayor with the business of having a practice? I don't know if there's anybody who could or would do it.
There are exhibits of medical equipment throughout the gallery, but the centerpiece is a functioning iron lung restored by Larry David of Blackhawk. That sound in the background is the electric motor and bellows. Christy Thielen says the machine was used in a hospital in the Northern Hills. The chamber is tiny. It wouldn't hold a very big person. You can peer inside and see where the patient would lie on what Thielen says is called the cookie tray, probably so named because it slides into the machine like a cookie sheet slides into an oven.
The young woman who was in this for over a year eventually recovered her health to the point where she no longer needed to be in the iron lung. She did not regain the use of her arms.
Thielen points out that the woman's arms were paralyzed by polio.
So she lived the rest of her life, lived a long, productive life, engaged in a number of skills, had a family, became a seamstress, had other things that occupied her time, and she did all of it with her feet.
Other items in the exhibit include a doctor's battlefield surgery kit, amazingly tiny considering it was most often used for amputations. There's a surgical table that seems delicate by today's standards. Like the iron lung, it also is apparently not built for hefty patients. Over it hangs a large photo of a surgical team standing around that same table. And of course, there's a metal bedpan with a large chip in the white paint. But most compelling are the human stories written on cards alongside black and white photos of the men and women of medicine who once brought health care to the Black Hills. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City.